Hello, everyone out there. What is going on? Stephen Ignoramus here. Welcome to Call Me Ignorant, episode number 36, 6:05 p.m., July 31st, 2019. So pleased you could be with us. Call Me Ignorant is a live conversation show, whether with an interesting content creator, an expert in a field, a controversial figure, or with a fellow human being trying to spread a message. Call Me Ignorant will try to solve the problems of the world, conversationally speaking. We are streaming live right now to YouTube, Twitch, Periscope, Mixer, DLive, and Picarto. If you can't catch the show live, you can find it after the fact on the above-mentioned platforms, also on BitChute and FreedomScoop.com. Call Me Ignorant is also available in podcast format on Apple, Spotify, Google Play, and Podbean. You can find me on Twitter at IgnoramusSteve, join the Discord server linked below in the show description, or send me an email at StephenIgnoramus@gmail.com if you want to participate in the show. With me on the program today is Nikki, also known as Liberty Doll. She is a YouTuber who focuses on liberty-minded news, discussion, and witticisms. You can find her on Twitter at The Liberty Doll, all one word, and I'm really excited to talk to her today about her background, some liberty-minded current events, and a few subjects that she has been covering on her latest videos. Thank you so much for coming on the program today, Nikki. Welcome to Call Me Ignorant.
Thank you, man. Like, you have all of the things. You just listed off like a dozen things.
All that technology.
Man, I need to have more things.
You do. have you done a lot of live streams? I saw the most recent one, but how many have you done?
Like four.
Nice. Okay.
So they look pretty crappy, and I'm still kind of like, oh yeah, I'm supposed to read super chats, or I'm supposed to talk to people, or like I'm like, I didn't take enough notes and I ran out of things to talk about, so I'll just ramble like Alex Jones for a few minutes.
That's a good thing. That's a good thing to do. I mean, maybe not like Alex Jones, maybe like Alex Jones. I don't know.
I wish I had an Alex Jones impression. That'd be pretty cool. I don't.
Interdimensional lizard aliens that are like, I don't know.
The frogs are gay.
Fact check true. They are in fact gay. But I actually think he said transsex. I don't think that's exactly true that they're gay. But anyway, it's just the water. But yeah, like, what did you do before you started YouTube stuff? Like, what do you do for a living? And I don't know, when did you start your channel? I guess that's like five questions, but yeah.
Okay, so, all right. Well, the Liberty stuff started, let's see. I started my Facebook page first, and that was either, that must have been really late 2010.
Oh, wow.
Or early 2011. Because what happened was I was in grad school at the time, so I didn't have a career yet. I was ice cream scooper girl and Applebee's hostess girl. So basically I started getting into first like conservatism around then, constitutionalism, minarchy, all that stuff. Ron Paul was amazing. Ron Paul brought me into the fold in all of everything that he talked about, his books, all of that. And what really happened is I started talking about those things online on my own personal Facebook, because what happens, at least if you grew up as a liberal, when you find out that the government is corrupt and awful and doing horrible things, and that there's this thing called liberty and this other thing called freedom, you want to tell everyone about it because it's exciting.
Truth.
And you didn't know that this existed.
Yeah.
So I would post on my personal Facebook all the time and talk about these things, and people got pissed off. They didn't like it. I had some people tell me I was doing it for attention. I had one of my best friends at the time tell me that I was changing for a man and that I was just parroting what a man was telling me.
Ron Paul.
I mean, right. Well, and my now husband is the one that was like, wow, you should check out this Ron Paul guy. But it wasn't a, you know, let me go get me a man by reading Ron Paul. But that's what this friend accused me of. So I was like, you know what? I'm losing friends. I am losing relationships with family members, so, you know, I'll start a Facebook page. And back then, starting a Facebook page was a viable option. It's not like it is now where they want you to, like, boost posts for $100 or something like that for anyone to see it. So I started the Facebook page. And I just kind of had my musings. I had memes, things like that. I started a little blog. And then eventually, I would start getting messages and emails that were basically like, hey, yeah, like your articles are good, but I don't feel like reading. It would just be like way easier if you made videos. And I was really resistant to that for a long time because, like most people, I don't like the sound of my own voice. I was not a fan of being on camera. And I didn't think that I would ever have enough to say to have a YouTube channel. But with enough people finally, you know, saying all those things to me, of like, oh, I don't want to read. I don't want to read. I don't want to read. I decided to just step in and start the YouTube channel. And let's see, I don't remember when it was that I started that, but I remember my second video was about these new HIPAA regulations coming in that were related to gun control and related to Obamacare. So I believe at that point I had graduated. Yeah, I had graduated and I was working at a nonprofit mental health clinic because I went to grad school to be a mental health therapist. So I was working as like an entry-level psychotherapist at the time. And so that's how I had the information about the new HIPAA things that were coming through and like the state regulations that were coming through. So it was a really roundabout way to answer your question.
That's fine. Yeah, no, it's cool to get some background. So when you started your actual channel, like how many, I don't know if we want to like talk numbers, but did you have, was it successful quick? Like how many did, when you posted your first video, how many views did it have within the first week or two? Was it like 10, 100, 50? Like, because was your Facebook page also popular before that or was it kind of just, I don't know?
My Facebook page was pretty popular before that because, like I said, back then, the regular Facebook page operated a lot like a personal page.
Right, exactly.
Where so long as you posted something that a lot of people interacted with, like everyone on your list would see it. So I posted a lot of memes. I would do, I was in these little like Facebook admin groups where we would agree to do like share for shares. Like, oh, I'll share your page if you share mine.
Interesting.
Or I'll share something from your thing. And so that was a way that you could get a lot of people and get your message out there. Because the whole reason that I started Liberty Doll was because I wanted to talk to people about liberty and educate them while also writing, because writing has always been my first passion, but you can't really make much of a career doing that. So it was just a way for me to write and like get the information out. So I wanted to like amass followers, not because I wanted to be a celebritarian or be famous or get attention. I was like, wow, well, the more people that see this, they'll tell other people and we'll get the message out there. And I sort of had this like pipe dream that I would see like a libertarian government in my lifetime. Ha ha ha.
I've been there. Yeah.
How I have fallen.
Yeah.
But so I was like, oh, well, you know, everyone would be a libertarian if they just heard Ron Paul. And so it was to get it out there, to try to, you know, instead of turning the frogs gay, I was trying to turn people libertarian.
Why do you think that, to me, I thought the same thing before. It's like if people would just hear Ron Paul and they would become, I don't know about libertarian. I mean, people are scared off by like labels and stuff like that, but at least they would like think that way about his ideas and stuff like that. Why don't you think that gains momentum like it should in people like our eyes, you know? Why do you think that is?
Well, oh, I mean, that's tough because it's really hard to generalize anything like that.
Sure.
So a few reasons. Number one, I would say libertarianism takes a certain appeal to logic and making decisions based on logic. And while most people probably think of themselves as logical beings, the truth is that most people make their decisions based on emotions. And while those emotions are a sort of working on like self-incentive and self-interest, which is kind of required in libertarianism and capitalism. They look at it as like, oh, well, you know, everyone else would be greedy, so this would never work. Or, you know, I want the free stuff. Or I want promises of security from the government. Or, you know, whatever. I want the schools to be safe. Whatever it is. So they base decisions on emotion. And again, while something like capitalism requires people to work in self-interest and those sort of incentives, it's really just highly logical. And most people aren't completely there, I would say. Also, a lot of people just don't like change. And
that makes sense.
Biologically speaking, from an evolutionary psychology perspective, that makes sense. Because when we were all running around like naked cavemen, change was bad. Ooh. Change could kill you.
Yeah, that's a good
so
point.
So we have been hardwired to resist change, which I think is another reason why we always end up in the same status quo of politics.
Mm. Interesting. What about your background? Were you like raised with liberty in mind at all? Like, did your parents?
Absolutely not.
No. What type of background politically? Or like, my background is like, we just didn't really talk about politics or issues at all. Like, it was maybe I was raised like religious, but what about you? How was like the dinner table conversation about politics and stuff like that when you were growing up?
Well, how do I answer this? So first of all, my family never had dinner table conversation.
Okay.
At all. All
right.
Politics weren't really talked about, but I mean, all in all, I guess you would say raised liberal because I'm born and raised in Massachusetts.
Oh, gotcha.
And everyone here is liberal. And if you're not, you're the devil.
Mm-hmm.
even going to Catholic school, things were pretty liberal to the point that, you know, everyone says like, oh, well, you know, the Catholics are homophobic and blah, blah, blah. And like, I don't know, maybe they are in other places. But let me tell you, in my high school, because I went to Catholic school K through 12, in my high school, like, the gay guys were the most popular people.
Mm. Yeah.
and to the point that in my sophomore year of high school in my history class, it was an election year, or maybe it was junior year. Either way, it was an election year, and my history teacher mentioned the word libertarian and said that she was a libertarian, and none of us knew what that meant, but she told us that we weren't allowed to tell anyone that she told us she was a libertarian.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
And now that I am older and understand what that means, I totally get why she said that. So yes, raised very liberal, and my dad's family, most of them are retired military, were career military. Everyone served. I'm like the only person in my family that didn't serve. And so you would think that they would be more conservative, but even they are a lot more liberal to the point that the whole Liberty Doll thing caused me to lose some relationships with some family members, one of which was an uncle that said, you know, we were making a joke. My husband and I were like, oh, you know, yeah, if the apocalypse ever happens, like, we're grabbing our guns and we're coming up here, because they live in like backwoods Vermont on a mountain with like nothing else around, and they're really outdoorsy type. And he was like, oh yeah, well, if anyone shows up on my property with a gun, I'm shooting them dead, even though he doesn't have a gun. And he's really, it was demonstrating that he's that much against guns that he would kill anyone that he saw with a gun.
Wow. And is this a family member that previously served or no?
Yes.
What?
Yeah.
That's very bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
That's really weird. You'd think that be like, all right, we'll pool forces and you know. That's really interesting.
I mean, I'm assuming it's some kind of like trauma reaction thing, but still, like, it's pretty harsh.
Wow. Yeah. So you're a therapist now, right? And you know, we talked a little bit that you can talk about some things, but you know, I'm not going to be asking for a list of client names. Don't worry.
Oh no, that would be all kinds of illegal.
Yeah, for sure. So, what's that like balancing the two? I mean, do you have people that like recognize you, or you know, like, do they ever cross overlap and you have to like fire a client or not make a video or anything like that? Does it get messy?
Well, all right. So no one has recognized me yet. I have had two instances so far. I like to call them like breaches. I don't know why. It feels
good
technical
word.
And fun.
Yeah,
that's a yeah, good word. So I've had two breaches, we'll say. One was a past client and had already discharged. One was a current client and still is a current client. In the case of the previous client, she texted me one day and was like, oh my God, one of my friends posted this YouTube video and it's you, LOL. And I just ignored it and pretended it never happened and never answered her and never spoke to her ever again, which was fine because she was discharged at that point and wasn't looking for anything from me. The other one that's a current client, thank God, he did not watch the video because, you know, hardcore socialist. And he had said to me, like, yeah, I kind of got a feeling that, like, maybe our politics might be different. So I didn't watch it. Thank God. I know that not everyone is going to be that logical and that rational.
Wow.
So
that's really cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
And it wasn't even like a super political video. It was my my video that I did about the gun control episode of Supergirl. And I guess he had been like searching comic book stuff.
Okay.
And that came up in his suggested videos. Now that YouTube doesn't suggest videos, that might not be a problem anymore. But regardless, living in Massachusetts, and I said this to one of my patrons today, you take all those crazy things that you see on Twitter and that you hear the liberal politicians saying in the debates, and you think, that is so nuts. How could anyone think that? How could anyone believe that? That is what I hear parroted back to me on a regular basis by people who actually believe those things. Just today, someone was like, oh, remember that horrible fascist march that happened in Boston, and like we were, you know, my friends and loved ones were ready to go in there and like beat up those people and da da da. And I'm thinking to myself, like, what fascist march in Boston? And then I'm like, oh, they were talking about the free speech rally that I was asked to speak at. They were talking about the rally that acquaintances of mine went to.
Yeah.
And that the Libertarian Party was a part of. Oh, okay. And there's things like that all the time. There's things like, you know, anyone who didn't vote for Hillary deserves to die. Anyone who is a capitalist is racist and hates poor people. And, you know, you hear those things online and you're like, ah, ha, 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 ha. But no, like, those things are said to me on a weekly, sometimes daily basis. And these people just assume that I agree with them.
Yeah.
So I'm constantly hearing, like, indirectly, they're not saying to me, well, you're a racist. But they're saying, anyone who's exactly like you is a racist. I don't know that you're like them, but everyone I know that's, or everyone that's exactly like you is a racist or is a bigot or doesn't deserve to live or any number of things. And it's really awful.
Wow. How how do you deal with it? You just, like, remain professional? Like, do you have
you have to, yeah. Because even though there are people in the profession that do not abide by this, there is a strict guideline in the American Counseling Association's Code of Ethics that you are to keep your politics and your values and your judgments and your morals to yourself. They do not belong anywhere in session, anywhere near session. So you have to. You kind of have to smile and nod. And, you know, I try to get away from that topic and go back to something therapeutic. But, I mean, sometimes that's not what happens. I mean, sometimes it's just a little thing in passing, like, I set up a dating profile for my friend and I set them as Republican because that's so disgusting and I thought it would be hilarious.
That's
you know, and I'm not even Republican, but I mean, to them, I've heard them, you know, people say that Republicans and libertarians or whatever are the exact same thing anyways, and libertarians are just as bad.
Right.
So with being in that environment having a couple people that have seen and found my videos, it puts me in this position where I kind of feel like I'm in a race against time. And I have to either get out of Massachusetts or make a choice. And I've kind of already made the choice earlier this year that, like, okay, once I get to a point where I think that, like, Liberty Doll can sustain it, I'm going to have to shift to that full time, because the internet is forever and I can't just, like, you know, shut off the YouTube and the Twitter and whatever and, like, go back to just doing therapy, because the internet doesn't work that way, number one. And number two, like I said, you know, writing is my first passion, and I sit and write entire, you know, 4 or 5 page single spaced essays for my videos, and I love it.
Cool. Do you have like a blog or anything? Do you do any work for like a publication or anything like that?
I do not. I've gotten a couple offers, and by offers, I say they were like, hey, can you write some articles for us for free? And I was like, I'm sorry, I have a full-time job and YouTube that I do on the side for funsies. Ain't nobody got time for that. If right. I do that, then something else is not getting done.
Okay, gotcha.
And my blog, like, I sometimes remember to update it with, like, a transcript of my video, but yeah. That's about it, because I don't know, between my practice that I run and do everything for myself and YouTube, it's about like 60 hours a week.
Wow. Yeah, that's intense. So that was going to be my next question, is like, what's your kind of, you mentioned some of it already, like what your workflow is like. So you basically script out your videos in like essay form, and yeah. Have you gotten pretty good at editing quick and, you know, making that?
No.
Okay. Gotcha. Me neither.
I'm a perfectionist, and I do it myself. And even if I had someone else to do it, I would not trust them to touch it. Quite frankly.
Cool. Nice. Yeah, I mean, I feel like most people that make videos have to kind of go through like tackling that challenge. The way I decided to do it is I do like 99% of what I do live. I just stream all of it, and whatever, if it's imperfect, then I just deal with it. But I can totally see going the other route where it's like, it's got to be perfect. I'm going to cut down to like the half a second and make sure it's perfect. But I don't know. So you do the essay form, and that's that. Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yep. I do essay form, and I have like a little teleprompter set up now with like a tablet, so that I'm not, because it also took me so long to record before. That part is faster now, because what I would do is I would like read one of my paragraphs and just try to memorize it paragraph by paragraph and like not look down at my screen. And I would do several takes of that and try to piece together as many sections as I could without losing eye contact.
Yeah.
And nice. It was impossible.
Yeah, that's pretty hard. Yeah.
So today I actually filmed a video in like my half hour before I ran to work. I was still like 5 minutes late to work, but I got it done.
Cool. That's pretty quick. That's nice. How often do you post videos? Like, is it a certain schedule or whenever
there
you can?
There is no schedule. No schedule, okay. I have tried so hard for the last, I'd say, 2, maybe 3 years to have a regular schedule, and I just can't do it. There's just no time. I'm at work most of the time till like 8:30, 9 o'clock at night. And I mean, client crises come up when I'm not at work. I'm doing notes, I'm doing billing, I'm dealing with insurance companies. It's just impossible. I try so hard. But I have been able to shift my schedule recently, and actually starting this week, Fridays are going to be just for working on videos and doing things for the channel. So like, hopefully I'll be able to do stuff more often.
Yeah.
Basically, if I get something out on a regular schedule or get out more than one video a week, it's because I did not sleep.
Okay.
At all.
Gotcha. Then that's not good. Yeah.
No.
So I watched like 9 or 10 of your videos or whatever, and you do a lot of stuff about like guns and stuff like that. Of course, that's what libertarians are all about. That's what I'm all about too. Of course, are you allowed to recommend shooting guns as a stress reducer for your clients? Are you allowed to say like, hey, there's a thing that I really enjoy, And I want you to keep it a secret. It's called firearms. Are you allowed to do that?
I suppose if I wanted to lose that person as a client and then get some really bad reviews on Yelp and probably get my business shut down.
You could,
I mean, it would
but
probably
it just,
be
yeah.
really great publicity for my channel. But that would be the equivalent of like putting on a suicide bomber vest or something.
Just wondering. Okay.
I mean, I have had two clients total. Well, no, three that liked guns in my entire time as a therapist. Mm-hmm. And both times it was kind of like, hey,
yeah,
do you like guns?
Exactly.
Oh. Me too. Don't tell anyone.
Yeah, I can totally picture that. I'm like, hey,
the
therapist
only
likes
time,
guns, yeah.
Fun fact, the only time it wasn't like that was when I first started out when I was working at that nonprofit, the company had decided that I was really, really good at working with gangbangers. Hmm. Your gang members from like the Bloods and the Crips and the Latin Kings and like the men and women that were on parole or just got put on probation. And there was one guy once, what did he get busted for? I think, was it selling crack that time? I don't remember what it was, but he had like a Glock in his belt. And I was like, oh yeah, what caliber is that? And he told me, I don't remember what it was. And I like was like, oh yeah, well, mine's bigger.
And he just yes.
put it back away. And that was that. And then I had all the respect of all the Bloods in that town.
Much love. Yeah. Cool. So, like, you're not a part of the Libertarian Party, right? You're, like, small L Libertarian.
Small
correct?
L. So, like, okay. I think I'm officially registered as a Libertarian because they let you do that after we got, like, the 5% vote last election. But, no, I'm not part of the big L Libertarian Party. Frankly, all of their politics is obnoxious.
Gotcha. So what do you classify yourself as a certain type of libertarian other than small L, like an ANCAP, minarchist, anything like that? Like how far does your brain go in that direction? Because when I got into libertarian, it wasn't long before I became like a full on ANCAP. And I've like since then pulled myself back a little bit to more of like a minarchist, nationalist, federalist or whatever. But where do you sit on that spectrum?
Well, so I've been asked this question a few times, and what I usually say is that all libertarians are ANCAPs, but not all ANCAP. Or wait, no, all ANCAPs are libertarians, but not all libertarians are ANCAPs.
Yep. Interesting. And you're not. You don't want. Do you want to abolish the state? Like, is that a thing that you're? One of your goals. It's pretty hard.
I will
to
not
think
confirm
about.
Or deny.
Gotcha.
Whether
okay.
or not that is a goal.
I'm with it. Okay. Gotcha. That's hilarious. So yeah, that's.
I mean, there are certain things. You know, I libertarianism is a broad umbrella.
Yep.
It is also the smartest umbrella, marketing wise, if you are trying to reach people.
Hmm. Gotcha. Sweet. It's all about the brand. Yeah. Cool. So, I don't know. So I think like, you know, for the remainder of our time or stuff like that, I want to talk about some stuff you brought up in your latest videos. So you did a video on the NRA and, that's one of the, you know, I talk about the NRA on my stream sometimes as like, it's kind of one of the most widely misunderstood organizations by both sides. Like the people on the left think it's like the devil organization that gets
clearly they sell guns.
Yeah, that gets all the lobbying done. But on the other side, people that are really, really pro-gun think that the NRA doesn't go far enough at all. They're just like, okay, they're, you know, so like I'm a member of the NRA and the GOA and USCCA. And but most of the people that are super pro-gun are just like, dude, NRA is just a bunch of corporate hacks or whatever.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
You know what I mean? So why don't you tell the people about like the research you did into them and some of their controversies, and they might be like either shutting down or like they're pretty corrupt at this point, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, so first you mentioned USCCA, so I'll say if you're interested in the USCCA membership, text DOLL, that's D-O-L-L,
oh, really?
To 87222. Yeah,
87222. Get my discount? Cool.
It spells out USCCA.
Okay.
That's a new thing, so I'll just plug that in there.
Sweet.
Oh boy, so the NRA, man, I have not been a member of the NRA for quite some time. I'm a member of GOL, which is the local like Massachusetts group. They are partnered and affiliated with the NRA, but I don't believe they actually are a branch of the NRA. They do a lot of stuff of telling you the requirements to get like your license to carry here and which towns you shouldn't even bother applying if you live in them because they're never going to give you one ever, things like that. We have some other local groups come to a they help with like firearms lawyers and things like that. So I'm a part of those. I'm a part of GOA. The NRA, man, I don't even remember what it was that they did that I was like, nah, that's it. But all their phone calls and emails and letters didn't help.
Very clickbaity. Yeah. Very
Yeah.
spammy. Yeah.
But so, I mean, the short of it is, at this point, they're like any powerful organization where, yeah, it does some good for a while, and then inevitably, someone who's only in it for the power or the money gets on board and takes it over and kind of holds itself. Holds it hostage and goes and spends $250,000 on clothing at a men's retailer in Beverly Hills. Or another $250,000 on, say, limo services and trips to the Bahamas for fundraising,
Yeah.
quote unquote. So, I mean, yeah, Wayne LaPierre
Yeah.
has done a lot of crap. And he's taken a lot of money. And what's interesting is I saw an interesting take. Some people are saying that all this stuff coming out about all this money that he took out of the budget for other things that have no business being affiliated with the NRA. Some people have said, like, oh, well, so the NRA needs to bribe politicians, and so they need to money launder. And so we're actually seeing that. And so it's not a bad thing because we know that they're doing their job of bribing politicians. I don't think that's what's happening.
Okay.
I don't think that yeah, I don't think that's a deal. I think that it's just, Wayne LaPierre is holding the NRA hostage. And what's interesting is there was someone who was previously on the board of directors who sent me an email after that video came out and saying, yes, that is absolutely what's going on. I was ousted from my committees and my positions by speaking out against Wayne LaPierre and the corruption and like the financial issues. And I asked them if they would be willing to do an interview or come on my channel, and they never answered. So
Oh,
I guess
wow.
that's not a thing. So I can't name names.
Yeah.
But it's just, reading, it was so hard to find the information of what's going on with the NRA and all the lawsuits that are going on with them right now and the money that they're bleeding and like the fact that they were, I think it was $46 million over budget in like 2016. Just insane. And it was so hard to find the information because they're not letting firearms people know about it, number one. And number two, the only people that are reporting on it because they're so happy the NRA might be going down is like Mother Jones and like Bloomberg.
Yeah.
So it took a lot of digging, and in the end, I had to rely a lot on this sort of like daily diary from Media Matters that chronicled all the articles by like day that came out about this situation with the
Really?
NRA. Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, and it's not looking good. It's
Yeah.
not looking good at all.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, there's kind of two points there is where, like, on one hand, it's almost like the government, that if the government was failing, the last thing they would do is tell people, because that can create like the circular loop of like if you lose confidence, people jump ship, then people jump ship because they lose
I wish
confidence.
they jump ship.
Yeah, I mean, so, and also what on the other hand, people like if you look at the comment section of something about the NRA on like Twitter or whatever, it's a bunch of people like we got to go after the NRA, we got to shut down the NRA, and it's like yo, all these guns people, they would just go to a different organization. I mean, it's not you're not
Yep.
killing the guns people. Now,
No.
you probably want a lot of people probably want to, but like you know, but like it's not like guns people are beholden to the NRA. They just they want a gun lobby group. They want, and so, you know, if the NRA gets shut down tomorrow, we would just find another place to go.
Right. And there was quite a few people that got pretty angry that I was like picking on the NRA and like infighting. So they probably didn't get to the end of my video, but in the end of the video, I said exactly that. I was like, you know what? Groups like the NRA are made up of gun owners, and
Yeah.
gun owners aren't going anywhere. And so there's still other organizations like GOA, like GOL, like the Second Amendment Foundation, the Firearms Policy Coalition, COM2A. There's still all of these organizations. Like, people are just going to shift to something else.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and it's like, I don't know, what good is an organization if it can't stand up to criticism? I mean, it's like, it's, you know, if it's not about the right stuff. But like, you know, the thing you brought up earlier a little bit that's still good about the NRA and is their education. You know, they still provide
Yes.
like certified training. If you go on their website, there's just classes and classes all over the country, and that's still good. And it's like, if they went away tomorrow, what would happen with
That is.
that?
So, I mean, that's a good question, and I had thought of that after I did the video, unfortunately, because that's how things happen. But I was like, gee, like, so for Massachusetts, for example, you have to get an NRA certified safety course
Yeah.
with a firearms instructor in order to apply for your license. You can't get a license without one. So, okay, if there's no NRA, does that mean that Massachusetts just won't let you apply for permits anymore? And yes, the NRA has great training, but there were some comments and people that reached out to me after that video that said that they were firearms instructors with the NRA, and that the NRA was slowly taking away classes, and even that program was dying
Oh
off.
no, really?
Yeah. So I don't really know much about that, but that's what they were saying.
So if they were to, you know, close up shop tomorrow, what do you who do you see as the next best organization, GOA?
Probably.
Okay.
I had a lot of people that were very angry at that suggestion and were like, oh, well, they've never done anything. You've never seen them on the docket on any lawsuits. They don't file lawsuits. Well, but I mean, maybe they do activism
Yeah.
or whatever, but I mean, that's the one that I know that's like big nationally. Like, maybe the Second Amendment Foundation. I don't really know where they're based out of. I think Firearms Policy Coalition, aren't they mostly just California?
I had actually never heard of them till you just said it. I just typed it in. Yeah, I'd never heard of that FPC, but hundreds of thousands of patriots.
I know that I just always see them attached to like California lawsuits and different things happening in California.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. So I mean, I just wanted to get your thoughts on that real fast because you had that good video on it and stuff like that. But also, I was wondering. I saw your last live stream, and you gave a really good like legal. Military definition for an assault rifle. Do you think you could give the people that that type of definition so we could have it on the book so I could send it to people that are listening to this one?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
I get a lot of flack for using the word assault rifle, but number one, it is used in laws incorrectly, but it's used, and there is an actual military definition of assault rifle. An assault rifle is a rifle that is capable of select fire, meaning that it can do full auto, semi-auto, and or 3-round burst. So it has to have some sort of like more than semi-auto capability, which means multiple bullets per trigger pull. And it has to accept an intermediate cartridge, which means it is between like a hunting rifle, battle rifle cartridge, and between a pistol cartridge. Because the whole assault rifle was born by having a need that was not a battle rifle and not a pistol or submachine gun in World War II.
Okay.
And that's where it came from.
Gotcha. Okay. And so people that are, you know, that are saying that these are weapons of war. I mean, first of all, when someone's like, this is a weapon of war, like a killing machine, I'm like, yeah, it is. I mean, yeah, I mean, it's like anything could be a tool of killing. I mean,
Right.
anything could be. So it's just like the amount of rhetoric surrounding this when people are anti-gun, it's ridiculous. I mean, I don't, and it's hard to figure out whether the person is knows that they're twisting words and is doing it anyway, or they're just, if they don't know, it's really hard to figure out when someone's using like political rhetoric, you know?
It is hard, especially because like the definition of assault weapon, which is a completely made up term that started with Josh Sugarman
Okay.
in the 1980s. after there was this shooting in California with like an AK-47, and the Coalition Against Gun Violence was like, "Hey, we can use this." So it's a purposely misleading, made up term because literally they thought people would be too stupid to know the difference. So it already is born out of deception. And then, you know, the media takes it and runs with it. And also, in, like, the 80s and 90s, they'd be like, oh, this full-auto machine gun assault weapon that civilians have or can make in their garage. And, like, the NRA and different gun groups went to the media and was like, hey, you're giving out misinformation. We can teach you and help you. Media not interested. The NBC turned down information from the NRA. I don't even know how many times back then. But now you have these politicians and media shifting the definition so that any semi-automatic rifle with a detachable magazine is considered an assault weapon. That's the definition they were pushing in I-1639. Out of Oregon, or not Oregon, Washington, I'm sorry. And there was another one that came up recently where they were pushing that definition. I don't remember what state, but it's popular now, and that's not even close.
Yeah, so it's like, so they're, are they using the term so it can become a definition? Like, it's not a legal definition right now, but if, I mean, all you have to do is make it a law, and then it becomes a definition, you know, right? Do you think that's what they're going for?
Yeah, basically. Yeah. I mean, I think that the eventual goal is to ban all guns. And so, you know, assault weapon went from being purposely used to be, like, synonymous to assault rifle to now basically anything that isn't bolt action.
Man.
Yeah. And people hear assault weapon and they get scared, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And like, I mean, I've talked to so many people that, that think that that's an automatic weapon, that they just, I've seen people do that when talking to me. That's, it's like, it's one of those weapons that, I'm like, no, it's not. I mean, those are like $25,000 and you have to get like,
and you know what? Honestly, they are hard to shoot.
Yeah. You've shot one before?
Yes.
Nice.
I rented some in South Carolina. We went to this place in, I think it was in Charleston, and you can rent them. And I don't even remember what I shot. There was, some kind of, I don't remember. I know that there was a Tommy gun cause I was excited about that. And then I shot it and I was like, oh, that's really anticlimactic actually. There was, is it like a P90? The bullpup that the CIA guys and the Secret Service used to have.
Whoa.
That was really hard to shoot, actually. There was like a belt-fed machine gun from, I think, World War II. There was a few other things. And it, it's like, yeah, you have to really like hold it down or else you can just go whoop.
Wow. Is the ammo a lot? Is it the same kind of ammo?
So expensive.
It's both, it's expensive. What kind of ammo do they, is it just, yeah, what is the ammo they use in those? Is it same as like a 223 or a NATO? Like, what is it?
Well, I remember the belt-fed one, the cartridges were like this big.
Whoa.
Yeah, they were big. They were massive. They were the most expensive. Oh, God, you know, I can't remember. This was like 4 years ago now. And I don't remember. There was like six different things that we shot, so they all had different ammo. And you could only rent like a box of them, a box of ammo, or like of 10 rounds was like... I remember each one of the... I don't know, but I remember the ones that were like this. You just would shoot it for like 30 seconds and it was like $100
gone. And it was just over at that. You're like, all right, see ya. Have fun.
It's like, all right, I'm not going to load more in that.
Wow. Wow. Thanks for all the information on weapons and stuff like that. It's cool. Wonder if for the rest of the time we could talk about like immigration and the welfare state, because you said some stuff about that on your stream and I had some questions about that. Now, I don't know. Like, you know, most libertarians I talk to, including myself, kind of have the same stance on same-ish stance of like, if resources were, you know, if there were no such thing as finite resources and we could help every single person in the entire world and there wasn't a welfare state, then essentially it could be open borders because people would have to create their own value. You know, they wouldn't be taking other people's tax dollars and stuff like that. How do you feel about that?
Well, I mean, yeah, if that were the situation, absolutely, because I also very much believe in free association and free dissociation,
right,
which means, you know, people can associate or not associate with whoever they like and travel wherever they would like, except private property, of course, because property rights, you know, so people would be able to come and go as they please. And you're right, they would have to create their own value and their own wealth. Unfortunately, that's not the situation.
So what do we do? What do we do about it? I mean, like, it's like there's kind of the way I look at it, it's kind of like people are like, you know, close the camps. And some people are saying open borders. And even when they're not saying it, you know, outright, that the policies they're advocating for are essentially open borders. You know, they want to decriminalize it and kind of let people in. Like, how do you solve it? Do you close the border? I don't know if a wall would work, but I'm not a big wall guy, but I am nations are allowed to close their borders if they want to, whether it's Japan or any other country, and we're just a country. So how do you see as the way to fix this thing? I mean, because the welfare state is not going to end. I mean, I wish it would.
Oh, goodness, no.
You know, that's like, you know, quitting heroin after you're doing like a pound a day. You know, it's I don't know what, like...
So somehow didn't die.
Yeah, and somehow didn't die. And like, so what do you think is the thing you do about this? Because this is where I understand how people do go full MAGA, where they're like, it's like a one issue thing. It's immigration. It's like, we're a people. They're a different people. Do we get to exist? You know, so how do you feel about the solution there?
Well, so this is not something that I typically talk about because I don't have a solution.
Yeah.
I really have no idea. Because you know what? I sympathize with immigrants. They want to come and take advantage of a better life. You know, and they want to, you know, they want to get out of places like Venezuela and Cuba. And absolutely, I would want to get out of those places too. you know, when I was a teenager, I worked with a woman who was a refugee from Bosnia. And oh my God, this poor woman, she had been this like big shot accountant back in Bosnia, and she came to the US and her accounting degree wasn't honored. And so she was a full-time cook in a nursing home working 80 hours a week to try to put her son through Tufts Medical School. So, you know, I sympathize with that. I've also had the experience where, you know, when I was working in, you know, doing community in-home therapy, where I would go in and talk to immigrants from certain areas in certain countries, and I would say, well, you know, what brought you to America? And they said, well, I know America gives you free money. Okay. Well, yeah. I guess that's as good a reason as any. So, I don't know. I think that it is such a complicated problem, and it's such a long-running problem, that there is no easy one-shot solution. I'll tell you what's not the solution is what some of these people like Pete Buttigieg are saying, and like, oh, well, you know, we need to send billions and billions and billions of dollars of humanitarian aid to Venezuela or these other Latin American countries, or we need to go in there and do regime change. Absolutely not. You know, interventionism has gotten us nowhere. You know, it results in blowback. It results in angry people. We have no business trying to fix other people's problems when we cannot fix our own, and we don't have the money for that.
Right.
So, I mean, I can say what is not the solution.
Yeah. It's interesting because I've when I've talked with people about this on Twitter and stuff like that, is a lot of people have sent me great articles about how a lot of the reason we're getting so much immigrants because we've backed coups already in Central America. So it's like that ain't it at all. And
no.
Yeah. How do you see shrinking the, I mean, I don't know, like no huge entity de-bloats itself. So like, how does this welfare state end? I mean, the end goal, not the end goal, the end game of it happening is always a collapse. So if that doesn't sound good. And so, but if it is to not collapse, what is, how do you see a way of us turning that around? I mean, it's really hard to not go full collapsitarian. You're right. It's like hard to like not be like, okay, it, like to me, it's very hard to not get into prepper mentality, you know?
Right. Yeah. I mean, and I may or may not have a bug out bag and some of those life straws and some waterproof matches.
Shit, I do. I'll openly say it. I do. For sure.
I also have a bunch of number 10 cans of like chili mac that I bought before I learned that I was gluten intolerant. So I can't even eat my survival food. It would kill me. So there's that.
Oh no.
I have to see if I can sell those on Amazon or something. It was like, oh. Those were the ones that were on sale. I don't know, man. Any scenario that I can think of as to how any of this could end or get turned around is very dystopian.
Right.
You know, it's very Brave New World or 1984 or Hunger Games or any of the other, you know, number of dystopian fiction books.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to figure it out. I mean, you know, like, yeah, it's hard to not go to like just straight up individual level too. I mean, cause if like, you know, if there's going to be a dystopian government or something like that, I kind of don't want a part of it. So it's like learn to farm, like buy land, you know, and pray, you know?
Yeah, because, I mean, there was even, you know, there's a lot of people that are like, oh, change it from the inside. And I don't know if you're familiar with Larkin Rose at all, but he wrote this book called The Iron Web.
No.
Okay, so he's an anarcho-capitalist slash voluntarist, and he wrote this book called The Iron Web. And the whole premise of it, basically, is you have all these different characters, and they're going through life and starting to learn the evils of government, and then you have this guy, Senator Collins, and he runs for president. And he gets it, and he wins, and he makes this whole speech to the sheep of the voting masses, and basically, in his speech, disbands all of the alphabet soup government agencies and tries to disband the government, and then it's just like, mic drop, see ya, and like walks off stage. And so what happens is he goes and joins this little community of other people that just kind of want to live outside the government, and everything's okay for a little while, and then the government says, F that, we're not listening to this guy, don't disband anything, and the tanks roll in.
Snap diggity.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Can you say the name of that dude one more time so I can
Larkin Rose.
Larkin Rose, okay.
He wrote The Iron Web. He wrote... I think it's called The Most Popular Superstition, and a few other ones. Sometimes on his website, his books are out of stock, and we learned that if you email him and you're like, hey, I want to buy your book, he'll just send you a copy.
Cool. All right. Thanks for that. I will look that up. So we just have a couple minutes left, and the last thing I wanted to ask you about, since you live in Massachusetts, I heard you mention this a little bit on your stream, the Straight Pride Parade is next month. And it's in Boston. So let's talk for a couple minutes. Just give me your thoughts on the Straight Pride Parade, it being in your home state. And do you actually live in Boston, or are you not in the city?
I'm not in the city. Okay. I used to be, and I escaped. Gotcha. And now I just want to live on like 15 acres in the middle of nowhere somewhere. Because right now I'm in a college town, and even that is too many people.
Yeah.
So the Straight Pride Parade. Well... When someone recently said to me, like, oh, that fascist rally in Boston, I thought, wait, did the Straight Pride Parade happen?
That's
already?
What I was going to say when you said that. I was like, you mean the one that's coming up?
You know, not that that's a fascist thing, but man, if you want to change people's minds, being obnoxious or trolling them or whatever is not the way to do it. You know... Gay pride has lasted for I don't know how long. It's been a thing as long as I can remember. It's been around at least for 15 years. Just let the gay people have their pride parades. And, you know, if you want to be like, yes, the Republicans or conservatives or libertarians or whoever else are welcome. and welcome, you know, LGBTQIAABQ plus whatever. Having a straight pride parade is not the way to do it. It's just really bad optics and makes you look like an asshole.
Gotcha. So, like, do you think what I'm not a straight pride organizer. I probably will not be attending. But, like, if I ask those people, like, why they're doing it, and if you brought up changing people's minds, I don't think that would be it, even in the top five of their goal.
No, right? Probably. It's probably like, oh, well, the gays get a parade, yeah, exactly. So why shouldn't we?
Exactly.
And, I mean, unfortunately, politics have become so polarized. Yeah. And I mean, it started kind of in the Bush era, but I mean, it got really bad under Obama. And yeah. I think part of it is Obama really, really fostered and helped stoke the fires of the, well, anyone who didn't vote for Obama is racist thing. And you know, there was the Ferguson thing, and you know, Trayvon Martin could have been my son, and I mean, you know, I have all kinds of different thoughts and feelings around all of that, and you know, I don't think having a police force that's a paramilitary organization and describes themselves as such is great for anyone, no matter their race,
right?
But I mean, he just stoked the fires.
Transgender people in the military, all kinds of stuff, yeah.
Man, and it's like, I don't care if there's a trans person in the military. I don't think we should be paying for all of their hormones and surgeries.
That's where it gets really weird.
Because it's none of my business.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Yeah, I mean, like, the thing I can understand is that it really does seem, though, like, if we live in a society that's, like, prioritizes equality, which I'm not exactly a fan of. I mean, I just got done with a podcast with dude Clint, and we were talking about how you prioritize quality, not equality, like just prioritize being good at something. But it seems like if we put fairness and equality at such a high priority, it's just like, you know, everybody gets a group or nobody gets a group. That's the that's the mentality I can, like, really understand, that it's like everyone does get something. And if other groups aren't allowed something, then you're going to get all kinds of parades. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And I mean, it's funny how much things have become like us versus them.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can look at any little, you know, manual, whatever, about how to create divisions. And it talks about really reinforcing the us versus them thing. And so I really like punk rock. And there's an old, I think, Anti-Flag song. I forget the name of it right now because I don't really like much else of anything that they do. But it basically is like, oh, how to create a terrorist organization. And it's like, step one, do this. Step two, do that. And it's very much of like, oh, pick two groups and send them against each other and say that each one hates the other one. And that's how you create a terrorist organization.
Interesting. Do you know the name of that song?
Not off the top of my head.
Okay, I will look it up. I like Anti-Flag as well. I mean, I like a couple songs.
I used to be really into punk. Liked their older stuff. Their newer stuff makes me sad.
Cool. All right. Well, yeah, that was an awesome conversation. Thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was great.
Why don't you tell people where they can find you and stuff like that? I have your information plugged below, but why don't you plug it in audio form and we'll bounce.
Okay. So, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram are all under The Liberty Doll. You can search it. I'm on YouTube as also The Liberty Doll. I'm over on Gunstreamer, BitChute, and Full 30. You can get audio-only versions of all my newer videos now on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. I think that's everything.
Cool.
Wow, that went by really quickly. Nice. Yeah, that might have been everything.
I've never heard of Gunstreamer. I'm looking into it right now. It looks kind of cool.
Yeah, and it's really cool that anything that you put up on YouTube, it just like takes it automatically, like BitChute does.
Nice. We got a couple people in the chat saying that you helped pull them over to the libertarian side. That's pretty cool.
Hooray!
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, lots of love out there. Sweet. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for checking out Call Me Ignorant today. You can find this uploaded to YouTube, BitChute, and FreedomScoop.com as a video, and Apple, Spotify, Google Play, and Podbean as a podcast. If you feel like you've benefited from the show and want to support, you can donate via DLive, PayPal, or Streamlabs. Sign up with a monthly pledge on Bitbacker, Subscribestar, or Patreon. All of that is linked below in the show description. I hope everyone enjoyed the show today. My guest today was Liberty Doll. You can find her information linked below in the show description. Have a fantastic day, everybody. Go inform yourselves. Nice talking to you.